that I have been for a number of years the Senate representative on the Code Commission. The corporation law of the state of Alaska is such that it's very difficult to tell precisely what the law is. We adopted the Oregon Code a number of years ago. Oregon has since done away with the corporation code that we adopted from them and replaced it with a new code not unsimilar to the one that we had before us. I think most everyone within the bar agrees that there ought to be a clearly set forth policy regarding corporate law. The Code Commission attempted, and I think successfully, to do that. Perhaps the best commentary one can provide for the bill is the fact that all of the people in the state who have looked at the bill and have had an interest in how corporations are structured have agreed that this bill is a good bill and it's a desirable bill to pass because it does clarify a great many things. I might also add that it will, in all probability, greatly save the amount of money that's necessary for legal fees because of the inexactness or uncertainty that now surrounds corporate law. The Code Commission retained Professor Daniel Fessler from the University of California Law School, who is a recognized national expert in corporations. It's my understanding, Sheila, that Professor Fessler is standing by now in Davis, California, and perhaps the best thing we can do to have the committee understand exactly what was done here is to have Professor Fessler give a short overview of the bill. He is, I think, more capable than anyone I know. And with your leave, Sheila, perhaps you could ask Professor Fessler to...
You can go ahead.
Tim?
Just push on your microphone.
Okay. Professor Fessler, this is Pat Rooney speaking.
Yes, Pat, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Fine.
Professor, I just gave a brief introduction to the work of the Code Commission. Perhaps for the members of the Commerce Committee, if you could explain briefly the... And perhaps give a brief overview of the bill, this might be very helpful to the committee members.
Very happy to attempt to do so, Senator. The bill represents a comprehensive revision of Alaska's current law on profit-taking corporations. I did not have an opportunity to hear your introduction, so I apologize to your colleagues if I am inadvertently covering ground of which you have already detailed. It would be perhaps of use to your colleagues to understand that existing Alaska law on profit-seeking corporations, current text of Chapter 5 of Title 10 of Alaska law, was enacted by the first legislature shortly after statehood, and at that time represented a wholesale adoption of what was then the current state of the law in the state of Oregon. Further, Oregon's law at that point in time represented a version of what was called the Model Corporation Act, which act had been adopted in Oregon. The Model Act, in turn, is a creature, if you will, of the Committee of the American Bar Association, which recommends this type of legislation to the several states. So the first point I think we would want to understand about existing Alaska law is that it was not written for the state of Alaska, nor was there any particular input with respect to the state of Alaska regarding the adoption of the Act. It was obviously necessary that there be domestic law on the subject of corporations, and this is the law which we wound up with. In the intervening period of time, the inadequacy of statutory treatment of profit-seeking corporations predicated upon that version of the Model Act has become evident in virtually every state that had adopted it. Oregon's own legislature has substantially revised Oregon law so that there is no longer a parallel between Alaska and Oregon's law. The Committee of the American Bar Association has undertaken many revisions of, or tinkering, if you will, with the law, and at the present time is attempting to engage in a wholesale revision of that law. So that whether we were to adopt the work of the Commission, which I would sincerely urge your colleagues is a desirable thing, or to await for the passage of several years for the emergence of what is the recommendation of the Committee of the American Bar Association, which is of necessity tailored to the needs of no particular state. It is pretty well conceded by all that the Model Act, which is the underlying provision for Oregon law, and which is the current Alaska law, has been eclipsed by events beyond that, as many Your colleagues may know who had occasion to work with the law, and as constituents may have complained, the law suffers from a total lack of organization. This is particularly vexing for anyone who is attempting to make a good faith effort to know the contents of a lack of the law on profit-seeking corporations, because provisions which may relate to one or more general topics can be spread throughout a statute at random, which covers nearly 45 printed pages of the existing printed legislation of Alaska law. So that is the basic perception that the commission evolved when, some 3.5 years ago, it asked me to work with them on a study of legislative and judicial development in other states, as well as looking at needs in Alaska to determine whether or not it was worthwhile to expend state funds and commission time on evolving a law that would be written by and for Alaska. They concluded it was. Further, they were influenced by provisions of law reform efforts of major dimension that had taken place first in the state of New York and then in the state of California. New York revised its law in 1969. California rewrote its basic corporation law in the mid-1970s. At the present time, the bill which is in front of your colleagues, if they examine the official comments which the commission has prepared, they will see that each section of the bill is described topically. There then follows a brief analysis of how, if at all, existing Alaska law would change should the legislature adopt the provisions of the Senate bill pending in your committee. And finally, there is a clear identification of the source of the law, section by section, whether it represents a provision of existing Alaska law, a revision of the Model Act, a modification of New York, California law, or whether it is something wholly innovative and new. So that is the basis upon which the revision was done. And perhaps I could pause now because I can't see your colleagues. May I ask if there are any questions that anyone would like to raise so far?
Thank you, Professor Fessler. Are there any questions from members? Professor Fessler, perhaps you could give a brief subject matter overview of the items that are contained in the proposed corporation code.
Yes, let me attempt to do so, Senator. Your colleagues will first notice that unlike existing Alaska law, this particular bill is drafted in such a way that it has a very clearly defined organizational structure. It is essentially crafted in 13 articles, the attempt being to draw into these articles all of the related provisions of the law. So, for example, were one of your constituents interested in forming a corporation, the information which that individual would need to consult is to be found in Article 3 of the revised statute. At the present time, one would have to look throughout a 45-page printed bill or statute in order to be certain that we had covered all the formation questions and we're complying with the requirements of the law. So that the first thing that one notices is that for the first time there is a strong organizational structure, which I believe will be helpful not only to attorneys, but to those individuals who are not attorneys, but who desire to read the statute and gain a knowledge of the law themselves. Article 1 deals with the definition of corporate purposes and powers. There truly is nothing remarkable there. It continues Alaska's present practice, which is in conformity with that of a great majority of states, in allowing citizens the freedom to form a corporation for any purpose other than a purpose which would offend the criminal law. The one thing one cannot do under existing Alaska law, and which one cannot do under this proposed bill, is use this profit-seeking corporation code to organize an insurance company or a banking institution because of greater state interest in regulating those two enterprises. The material that is in Article 2 is rather straightforward. It deals with the concept of the state's basic requirement that corporations have names which allow citizens to understand that they are dealing with a corporate entity, names which are not deceptively similar to the names of existing corporations or other businesses who have registered names with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and furthermore, names which do not suggest the affiliation with state, local, or municipal government. So, and there's further requirement that corporations designate an agent for the purpose of service of process, an agent who must be identified both as to the person or organization and its address, and this, of course, facilitates people in dealing with corporations as well as the government in dealing with corporations, because since you cannot shake hands with a corporation or meet it, it's very important that some human being be identified as the person upon whom process or other legal instruments could ultimately be served. Article 3, which deals with the formation of a corporation, I mentioned a few moments ago. Here there are two provisions which I think will interest members of your committee. First, a brief background on what the Commission desired. The Commission thought that it was best that individuals interested in forming new corporations be given clear instructions. John Abbott and Jerry Kurtz used to like to use the example in instructing me as to how to draft the bill, that they wanted it to read very much like a cookbook, that it should be a pretty straightforward recipe for the minimum requirements which the state has for those who would avail themselves of the privilege of becoming an Alaska corporation. And it is a privilege because I cannot become or charter a corporation without the positive consent of the state. I cannot affect the lives of other Alaskans, claiming limited liability for myself and the other advantages of corporate status without the consent of the state. Now, in looking at Article 3, the most important documents that individuals must execute are the Articles of Incorporation. The new law requires certain minimal requirements in the Articles of Incorporation, and then in an effort to protect investors, people who at the beginning of a corporate entity might wish to invest money, or subsequently who might wish to purchase stock, certain fundamental decisions about the nature of the corporation and the way in which power will be distributed is between the board of directors and the shareholders. Those fundamental decisions must be set forth in the Articles of Incorporation. That is a provision which we have borrowed from the revision of corporate laws both in New York as well as the state of California, and it's drawing increasing favor around the country. That there's one document which a person can look at, and that's the Articles. And from that, I can get a pretty good idea of what this particular corporation looks like. The Commission resisted the temptation to put many requirements on people, feeling that citizens should be allowed to structure corporations pretty much in the way they wanted, so long as it was fairly clear what everyone was doing. And there was a single major written piece of paper that I could pick up that gave me an idea of what it was that I was being asked to assent to. The provisions on the bylaws are also fairly clearly set out, and there is, for the first time, a requirement that shareholders, as well as the directors of a corporation, be given the opportunity to participate in the process of amending the bylaws. One of the ways in which current Alaska law seems to be heavily weighted in favor of directors is a current provision that reserves the right to change the bylaws to the board and excludes the shareholders from any participation. A good example of the philosophy of this bill is that we would permit such an arrangement to continue if the article specifically stated that shareholders would not have this power. But in the absence of such an article, shareholders share these powers with the board, much as both houses of your legislature have the power to initiate legislation in most fields. Article 4, which deals with corporate finance, also contains what I feel will be some very, very welcome reforms in the law. As I stated at the joint hearing held by the House and Senate committees about 10 days ago, one of the difficulties with existing corporate law, which is not peculiar to the state of Alaska, but for which my profession, the legal profession, bears responsibility, is that over the years, lawyers, perhaps because of a congenital inability to work with arithmetic, have come up with their own ideas of proper accounting procedures, ideas which sometimes amuse and often offend accountants or other individuals who have a far more learned understanding of how notions should be expressed in books and records. The result of this over many years is that accountants had increasing difficulty understanding the law and therefore increasing difficulty in counseling their clients in how to comply with the law. Lawyers have difficulty applying the law because accountants who really do keep books have no real way of relating to the legal requirements. So when litigation takes place, the whole mess becomes very evident. California spent about $1 million studying ways of resolving this question in the early 1970s. The result was a basic decision reflected in current California law, and I might suggest much praised by people in this jurisdiction, which basic decision is followed in this draft, and that is to scrap the ancient and antique notions of legal accounting, just drop them all together. Instead, realize that the state's only interest in the ways in which the books and records of a corporation are kept is keeping the corporation on a reasonably sound basis and responsible to its creditors by making it clear to the board and to the officers the circumstances under which it is licit to take corporate funds and pay them out to shareholders in the manner of a dividend. The way in which the new bill would do it is to state that there is perfect freedom in a corporation to distribute its assets to shareholders, whether in cash or in kind, so long as the assets which the corporation has remaining will exceed its liability to its creditors by a ratio of $5 in assets to every $4 in liability. This ratio assets surplus test would even be understood by me, that I was an individual who, through the kindness of a nun, was allowed to get beyond fourth grade arithmetic. I think it will make a good deal of common sense out of a very common problem that many people face, and a problem which under current Alaska law is very difficult to deal with. I'm about halfway through, Senator. Should I answer any questions?
You're doing fine, Professor Pester. Continue.
Well, if I'm on a proverbial roll, we'll go on now to Article 5, which deals with shareholders. Article 5 has a very important role to play from the state's interest. But the theory of this bill is that the major regulation of corporations should not be the responsibility of any government bureaucracy, but should be the responsibility of informed and participating shareholders who are the legal owners of a profit-seeking corporation. Therefore, the law attempts to go very far in the direction of making clear what are the minimum rights of shareholders to inspect corporate books, corporate records, and to exact an accounting from the individuals whom they have elected to be the directors of the corporation. We have attempted to relieve much of the confusion existing in Alaska law by standardizing requirements on notices. Under existing Alaska law, certain notices must be 30 days in advance. Others 20, still others 45, some 90. Here the attempt is to standardize notice provisions by setting a maximum notice. In other words, notice isn't effective if you give it too long in front of a shareholder meeting because people will forget. And a minimum notice. If you give notice at the very last moment, people cannot arrange their affairs so as to be able to attend. Other noteworthy provisions of Article 5 include regulation of proxies, where I allow someone else to cast my vote at a shareholder meeting, and regulating the problem of what are called voting trusts and side agreements among shareholders, where they promise one another that they will vote their shares as a block in order to accomplish certain purposes. The basic thrust of the commission, again, is to allow people freedom to arrange their own affairs, but to require warning to other shareholders that these agreements do exist, so that they will not be taken by surprise by secret combinations. Other very important provisions, Article 5 and Section 435, which deals with shareholder derivative actions. Alaska has the dubious distinction of being one of two of the 51 American jurisdictions that does not have any current statutory regulation of a derivative cause of action. Briefly, a derivative cause of action is when an individual shareholder sues an officer or director of a corporation, not for an injury allegedly done to the shareholder, but for an injury allegedly inflicted upon the corporation. Sometimes this is very beneficial, as it may be the only way that harm to the corporation by people who are in control of the entity can be brought to the attention of a court and remedied. However, we have had frequent experience, and these problems have touched Alaska on three occasions, in which we have had individuals who have brought actions not on the theory that they desire to really benefit the corporation, but because they realize the advantage of harassing existent management with the many obligations to respond to discovery devices in litigation. This matter is regulated by statute in virtually every state, and I believe that the commission is sound in its view that it is long past time that it be regulated by statute in Alaska. So Section 435, I think, represents the most balanced and comprehensive provision on derivative actions that we could find anywhere in the United States. And I particularly invite the scrutiny of your commission, or excuse me, your committee, since it has expertise in areas of commerce with regard to Section 435. Article 6 on officers and directors has the most important provisions as follows. For the first time, there is a clear statutory articulation of what the state and shareholders and creditors may expect of officers and directors in terms of their duties of care and their duties of loyalty. At the present time, it would require decisions by the Alaska Supreme Court to define these basic questions. That is, obviously instilling uncertainty into every man and woman who's attempting to do business as a corporate officer or director today, and it is an uncertainty which will be expensive and very time-consuming to resolve if we wait for litigation. As I think as the members of the Senate examine this bill, they must remember that Alaska, like the jurisdiction that I come from, Wyoming, is a state that does not have a large body of judge-made law in the business field. And therefore, we must look to the legislature and not to a history of 150 years of decisions of our state Supreme Court, as might be done in a state like Virginia, in order to answer these basic questions. Of great interest to members of the Senate will be the provisions in Article 6 that permit officers and directors to understand exactly when they are allowed to rely upon books and records and representations made to them by accountants, by lawyers, corporate employees, etc. We answer the question, what happens if I fail to attend meetings? Do I have any responsibility for what is or was not done at meetings? How do I go about resigning my position on the board? And at what point am I freed of the responsibilities of being a director if I attempt a reservation? All of these are examples of questions which today in Alaska are matters of doubt, which should the Senate take the lead and adopt and enact this bill, would now be matters of certainty. One of the provisions that you will be interested in debating in Article 6 is a provision that deals with what is called secondary liability of officers and directors. That is Section 488. Members of the House and Senate who attended the hearing about 10 days ago were very interested in this provision. And I would like to briefly comment on it and then pause to answer questions, for I feel that this is the one area of the bill which members should be frankly warned has received some criticism, though I think it's fair to say it has received far more favorable comments than negative comments. The idea is this. It is the essence of incorporation that the corporation and not the people who own it is responsible for its bills. We call it limited liability. This is true not only for contract debt, but it's also true for the victims of tort injuries. If a corporation owns a truck and the truck injures a citizen, the basic rule is that the citizen must look only to the assets of the corporation and no further to the personal assets of the beneficial owners of that corporate entity for recompense. Those assets prove insufficient. That's one of the prices everybody pays for having corporations in our midst. The Commission has no quarrel with the norm of limited liability. The Commission is worried, however, that the modern reality of the cost of litigation and dealing with the legal system to press a claim make it very difficult for small claims and the claims of relatively insignificant, if you will, people in the marketplace to gain any redress when there is abuse of limited liability. If I have a $1 million claim against a corporation, I probably have both the financial means and the incentive to go to a lawyer and press in litigation the question as to whether limited liability should be disregarded. If I am an employee and a corporation simply ceases to function, and I am told that the corporation has only $1,000 in assets, even though the individuals who own the corporation have many $1,000s in assets, and I am owed, let us say, $800 for back wages, I have, senators, no effective redress under Alaska law at all. No lawyer in right mind would advise me to attempt to sue a corporation to to test the question as to whether or not I should have the right to go beyond the insufficient assets to the assets of the beneficial owners. An $800 claim would cost a minimum of $10,000 to litigate. Now, because this is an unpleasant fact of the society that we live in, the real victims of limited liability when it is abused turn out to be the people who are in a position to hold small claims, employees who haven't been paid, materialmen, suppliers, individuals like fishermen who sell fish to restaurants that are incorporated and maybe own $4,000 or $5,000. Anyone who extends credit on open accounts and who's likely to have a rather small outstanding balance. The commission felt that limited liability was never created in order to permit these people to be the routine victims of corporations that are operated so long as they prove beneficial to the owners. And the moment it no longer suits the owner's convenience, the corporation is abandoned, and these people are left with the proverbial stucky. The result has been a suggestion to the Senate that it adopt Section 488. Section 488 says that the officers and directors, notice that the officers are designated, and the directors of a corporation are liable to the extent that corporate assets prove insufficient to a carefully enumerated class of creditors for a liability up to $25,000. Now, Senators, that's $25,000 per creditor. So that theoretically, if there were 10 creditors, there could be $250,000 of potential liability here. The liability is joint and several, meaning that all of the officers who fall within the bill and the directors must share in meeting that liability. That liability can be exacted without proof that the corporation had been run fraudulently. That's almost impossible to prove. So that is the essence of how the bill would change limited liability. But it is very important that you tell constituents this. Section 488 clearly states that it is possible for a potential creditor under this section to reduce or eliminate the liability that's created by the section if that individual does so in writing. But for the first time, people who are in business at the corporation will now have an incentive to enter into written agreements with the people who have been year in and year out on the short end of this stick. If those people are willing to bargain away this right, which would be created by Section 488, so be it. If they didn't, then the liability created by Section 488 would stand. And as I think the chairman will inform the members of the committee, there has been, in the mind of some members of the public who've commented, a question as to whether this is a good idea. It would be my humble suggestion that it is an idea long overdue, but ultimately it is for the Senate to decide. But Senator, are there any questions?
Okay, well then my question is probably taken care of by that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Are there other questions? Continue, Professor Fessler.
All right. Article 7 deals with amendments and changes. It is not an area that the Senate will find terribly innovative. In other words, it does not create great changes in existing Alaska law. One thing that it does, which is possible under existing Alaska law, is suggest that if there have been extensive amendments to the Articles of Incorporation, that those amendments be periodically restated in what are called restated articles, which makes it much easier for people to understand by, again, looking at this single document, the article, what are the basic decisions with regard to this corporation. A role for shareholders is definitely provided in passing upon any amendments to the article, because the Articles in a corporation function very much like the Constitution. That should be the basic organic law within the body. The bylaws are much easier to amend by the theory that they are much more akin to statutory law. So if there are no questions on amendments and changes, I pass on to Article 8, where there are some important innovations. Article 8 deals with what are called organic changes, merger, consolidation, share exchanges, and what are called sale of assets other than the regular course of business. This is an area that many Alaskans are concerned about, and I think with good measure. As the members of your committee doubtless know, one of the most interesting things happening in the American economy right now is the degree to which certain opportunistic people are coming along targeting certain corporations for what are called takeover bids. If the law is not well detailed, there can be great confusion as to the circumstances in which a corporation loses its basic identity through the process of a merger. A merger would be where corporations A and B emerge as corporation A, with B being swallowed up as a distinct entity. Or a consolidation, where corporations A and B emerge as a new corporate entity, corporation C. A share exchange would permit one corporation to acquire the total beneficial interest in another merely by providing the shareholders of corporation A with stock in corporation B. This bill recognizes that that is the functional equivalent of a merger, and thus fills a great loophole in existing Alaska law. Under sale of assets other than in the regular course of business, again, this statute recognizes that one way to accomplish the functional result of a merger is to sell off all the assets of a corporation except for $10 and leave this little shell with its $10 rattling around like a rock in your shoe while the basic assets have been drained off in this extraordinary transaction. The interests of Article 8 are to define these basic changes, to show how they are to be accomplished, to define the role for the board of directors as well as the shareholders of each constituent corporation, and to make the law applicable both to Alaska corporations and to any foreign corporations that attempt to become suitors, attempting to take over existing Alaska corporations. The testimony from Irv Bertram, the Associate General Counsel of Alaska Airlines, was that the provisions of Article 8 are to an Alaska corporation such as Alaska Airlines, which is now on the New York Stock Exchange, a godsend, because it gives certitude, for at the present time, there is a feeling of great unease because of the many vagaries of current Alaska statutory law. Article 9 deals with dissolution, as the way in which a corporation formally ceases to exist and accounts to both its creditors and shareholders for any assets which it has at the time it ceases to exist. Dissolution, for the first time, is basically categorized into two fundamental circumstances, where the dissolution is said to be voluntary, because a majority of the shareholders desire it. The basic thrust of this statute is to allow the corporation to carry out the process of its own dissolution, rather than requiring the expense of the appointment of receivers, which is current Alaska practice. If the dissolution is said to be involuntary, meaning that a majority of shareholders do not favor dissolution, but there is some ground of serious allegation of fraud, deadlock, or oppression within the corporation, then Article 9 makes the involuntary dissolution of a corporation the object of a court proceeding and relies upon an Alaska Superior Court to ensure fairness both to the corporation in determining that the grounds which are alleged can be proven, and fairness to all interested parties, including creditors of the corporation, whom we must remember are being forced by the idea of limited liability to look to the assets of this enterprise rather than to the assets of the owners. These reforms greatly simplify and clarify existing Alaska law. Article 10 deals with foreign corporations. These are corporations organized under the laws of the sister states, but not Alaska, or under the laws of another country, other than one of the states of the United States, which corporations then seek to come to Alaska and do business with the privileges of a corporate existence and limited liability. Here, the work of the commission has tracked the interest of the legislature in the past number of years in desiring to gain greater information respecting the identity of these foreign corporations and to require that they obtain from the state a permit to engage in the routine transaction of business within the state of Alaska, so that we might have some knowledge of the economic activity that is being carried out in the state. It also requires the foreign corporations that they designate an individual in the state of Alaska upon whom Alaskans can serve process in the event that they have a grievance that they wish to take to court, and forces these corporations as a price tag for doing business in Alaska to submit to the jurisdiction of Alaska courts in dealing with disputes with Alaska citizens. There is no great innovation here. All of the material which is contained in Article 10 could probably be achieved under existing Alaska law, But what is done here is a clarification and an organization and a render of certitude where in the past there has been much vagary. Article 11 dealing with reports, fees, and penalties attempts what I think many people determined to comply with the law will find very beneficial. It standardizes the reporting obligation and obliges the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development to develop forms to facilitate people's attempts to give the state the information which the state is legitimately seeking. It also attempts to make regular and identical the manner in which the Commissioner processes the many papers that pass through his or her office in compliance with the existing law or in compliance with this new statute. One of the problems with current Alaska law, there is no standard procedure for filing and disposing of papers which existing law requires be posted with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, nor are there forms required, and therefore there is confusion and tardiness and a surplusage of paperwork, an object which the Commission was seeking to reduce in dimension by its restatement of Article 11. Article 12 has only one remarkable feature, and that is a lengthy provision which defines the terms which are used within the statute. I believe that this will be very, very helpful to people because of necessity. Many of the terms that are used in this law have artful meaning, specific and precise meaning, and people should not be left in doubt that a meaning which is a legal meaning differs from that would be suggested should a person go to a Webster's dictionary. We have a further problem. To the extent that we have relied on the Model Act in the past, and to the extent that about 18 other states have versions of the Model Act, there's a lot of conflicting interpretation of terminology in the courts of other states, which, unless we clean the matter up in our own law, would leave an Alaskan attorney or judge or citizen with an absolute crapshoot in the dark as to what would eventually be the settled definition of key terms. Existing Alaska law has very little by way of definition. Definitions are very important to this statute, and they are detailed, and I hope that you would find them of great benefit. The general provisions of the Act, Section 990 deals with definitions, and it's under general provision. General provisions of the Act are exactly that. They're housekeeping matters. One thing to notice is with regard to powers of the Commissioner. The Co-Division Commission was very concerned that the executive branch of the government be restrained in its ability to make the law, a function which they felt belonged to the legislature, by having freewheeling powers to adopt, through a rulemaking process, rules and regulations. Section 953 of the Act is drawn restrictively to attempt to leave the development of Alaska's law in the future with the Senate and the House, and to reduce to a more minimal role. And more technical role, the rulemaking powers which it would vest in the executive branch of government. I might add that there has been absolutely no objection from Willis Kirkpatrick to taking this approach, given the very broad and comprehensive nature of this statutory revision. The Commissioner has expressed a desire to find the law as made by the legislature, rather than be forced to guess about it and attempt to make it within the department. Senator, that would be my offering as an overview, and I would be happy to entertain questions from members of the committee.
Thank you, Professor Fessler. Senator Rohde stepped off for a moment. I'll ask if there are any questions from the committee.
Professor, this is Senator Pettyjohn. Several years ago, the legislature, in an effort to cut down on the amount of paperwork required of individuals and businesses, changed Alaska laws to provide that corporate reports would only be due every 2 years instead of every 1 year. And people I know, that's something of a convenience. The fees are the same. You just pay 2 years at a time, and you don't have to file a report every year. Would that be a serious interference with the goals that you have in this corporate code?
Now, Section 805 of the bill continues the legislature's value judgment in requiring only biannual reports every other year in the state.
Thank you. I hadn't picked that up. Thank you, Professor.
Yes. So I think that the Commission recognized that it was a very useful reform which the legislature had recently done in moving to biannual reports. What is required, Senator, and what may have been the object of some confusion, confusion with your staff is that certain large corporations are required to make annual reports to their shareholders, not to the state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. We have Willis Kirkpatrick, the Director of Banking, with us here this afternoon, and he will like to testify on the bill. So, Mr. Kirkpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Willis Kirkpatrick.
Would you please kick it on? Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Willis Kirkpatrick. I'm Director of Banking, Securities, and Corporation of the State of Alaska. Professor mentioned that I have no opposition to this bill, and he's correct. The Alaska Code Revision Commission gave the Department of Commerce and Economic Development the opportunity to be included in their discussions concerning the points of this bill, and we've appreciated it, and we've had their cooperation with some of our ideas. There is a couple things that I'd like to point out. First of all, he mentioned that our code at the present time doesn't really have any basis from Alaska court cases, and we found ourselves in a position as administrators of the Alaska Business Corporation Code as it now stands, as answering questions as to what is meant by a certain section of law. When it's a lay person or corporation that's asking those questions, we refer them to the legal practitioner. But we have another problem when the legal practitioner calls us and say, what is the legislative intent of this particular section? And the only reference that we have is the Model Act, the official comments that the Model Act is adopted nationally. With considering this piece of legislation, the Alaska Code Revision Commission has developed what is called official comments, and I would certainly urge that if this act is given a favorable consideration and becomes law, that their comments also be noted either as a specific section of law or as a legislative note as a reference to the passage of the code. This will enable the practitioner to get an idea as to what the basis or the background was as far as the formation of the code. There will be a tremendous help for the state as far as administering the code, because then it also gives us guidance as to what the legislative intent or the history behind each section by section. There is one other point that I would like to make, and that is the bill that you have before you now requires, I believe, in section 733 on page 127, a requirement that foreign corporations file in their application for a certificate of authority, file their articles of incorporation and amendments. We've asked, and I believe the Alaska Code Revision Commission has offered to strike that provision. We would suggest that if information was sought concerning the articles of a foreign corporation, that they could be readily obtainable from the state of their domicile, plus the fact that if they've been on file with the Department of Commerce for a period of 2 years, their current biannual report would give a listing of their officers and directors and other information as to their outstanding shares.
Excuse me, has this already been proposed to... Well, are we covered here or not?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it is. It's page 127, lines 7 to 9 in the proposed amendments that you have before you.
Were you aware of that?
Yes, I was aware of that, but I'm speaking not knowing whether those were introduced yet to the committee or not.
Were they before the committee?
They're before the committee. And I have reviewed the amendments draft as proposed, and I'm in complete agreement with them, Mr. Chairman. So, and that would cover the point of my concern on that particular section that I mentioned. And I would also, in my final comment, saying if that was amended by the committee, that would then create a zero fiscal note for the state. The administration of this code would be no different than the administration of the present code as far as cost is concerned.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Kirkpatrick. Would you please show your switch? Dick Regan, would you Do you have anything to contribute at this point?
I can try to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Sit down, please.
I can try to answer questions, Mr. Chairman. We also have Professor Fessler, I believe, available to answer questions still if you wish to call him. And I do not try to be an expert on the bill, but I'll do the best I can.
Thank you. We also have Judge Stewart here, I believe, as a member of the commission.
That's correct.
Any questions for the committee? We do intend to submit a letter of intent for the journal which covers the point we were trying to make on the, was making on the commentary of the procedures for reference at a later date. Also, we have the committee amendment, proposed amendments before us. As I understand it, these amendments have been presented to all people who are concerned with this particular legislation, and they have, in effect, signed off on all these proposals?
That's correct.
Thank you. Are there any further questions by the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll go back to Professor Fessler. Evidently, he has an additional amendment. Go ahead.
Senator, I did not have an additional amendment. There was one thing which I had promised Elizabeth Johnson that I would bring to this committee's attention again, but I'm sure it may well have been covered by Senator Rohde. In addition to having the privilege of working with Willis Kirkpatrick in the department over the last several years, the commission has spent a year and a half working with a subcommittee appointed to represent the Alaska Federation of Natives. This has been a particularly instructive and useful exercise and has resulted in testimony presented to the Joint Committee 10 days ago, which has been memorialized by writings to various members of the Senate and various members of the House of the AFN's full endorsement of this bill. It was pointed out by Elizabeth Johnston, who is the General Counsel to Bristol Bay, and also who chaired the committee that evaluated the bill, that this would save considerable trouble as well as expense to the various village and regional corporations, because they, among all Alaskans, suffer most particularly by not knowing the content of law given the current status of the statute, and therefore would be benefited by the certitude that would be brought about should the Senate adopt this bill. I had promised Elizabeth that I would make those comments, and she would not be testifying today.
Thank you very much, Professor. You have anything further to add?
I do not, Senator, unless there are further questions from members of your committee.
I believe there are no further questions. We sincerely appreciate your participation in this particular hearing and your work you've done as a member of the commission.
Well, it has been my privilege, gentlemen, and again, I reiterate that I remain available to members of the body individually or to staff members should there be a desire for clarification on any of the work that has been done.
Yeah, this phone number? Thank you very much.
If I have your permission, Senator, I will sign off now.
Thank you.
Good day.
Is there anyone here who would like to testify on this particular bill? Judge, please. We're off of the network now.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'm Tom Stewart, and I'm a member of the Code of Vision Commission designated by the Chief Justice. I can claim no credit for the merits of this bill, which I think are very great indeed. My membership on the commission commenced at a time when the basic draft had been completed, when the detailed work both by Professor Fessler and by Jerry Kurtz and John Abbott and other members of the commission had reached its fruition. However, during my term, my tenure on the commission, which is now nearing 2 years, I have participated in the public hearings on this legislation. The proposed bill was taken before the State Bar Association at its convention in Anchorage a year and a half ago, and I believe was reviewed again at the convention in Fairbanks last year. As has already been said to the committee, we made an approach to all the members, all the regional corporations under the Alaska Native Claims Act of the federal government, knowing that in the 1990s, they will come under the terms of state corporate law. They will no longer have the status, the special status that they have had. And we had a great concern that something in this act might, in some way, unknown to us, adversely affect their interests. And those 13 corporations designated this committee from the Alaska Federation of Natives to to work with us that has been described to you, and we successfully, as a commission, met their concerns, I believe, and so that they have, as it were, signed off unanimously endorsing the legislation. And likewise, we widely distribute notice throughout the state to corporate entities that wanted to be heard. I think the legislation has been considered as thoroughly as any that I know in terms of seeking public comment and making sure that the public concerns were indeed met. And whatever use to you it is, I wanted you to know my personal evaluation that it has gone through an extensive and complete process, which I think is proof that it is highly meritorious legislation. It would be a great benefit to the business community throughout the state and to the community at large in terms of its clarifying what are now wide open ambiguities and holes in our present corporate law structure.
Thank you very much, Tom. Is there any questions for the committee? Senator?
I guess just perception, if I might judge it. It seems to me, and I'm in concurrence with it, but isn't it pro-stockholder rather than pro-director and officer tone in it?
It would be more pro-stockholder than anything. It clarifies the rights of stockholders as with relation to all of the corporate business. And it is pro-public in the sense of protecting the rights of creditors. This is what the secondary liability of officers and directors is all about, that particular provision. It seeks to protect small people in the public who are doing business with a corporate entity and might lose what's to them a significant amount, although it by its terms it's a very limited amount in terms of actual dollars. As Professor Fessler said, a maximum of $25,000 for a single claim, up to 10 claims.
Professor got our attention when he said it. As an example, a fisherman selling to a fly-by-night corporation, he has some guarantee that their checks are good down the road.
And I think that's expressive of the philosophy. It seeks to protect the little people more than anything else.
This, I like the taste of it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Senator, would you read the proposed amendments into the record?
Yes, I would certainly, Mr. Chairman. The amendments as proposed and would be as follows. Page 12, line 27 to 29, delete all material and insert 3, if incorporation is after March 24, 1982, the address of its initial registered office and the name of its initial registered agent. The second amendment, page 12, line 29, and delete at that address. Page 16, line 5, delete AS1006873 and insert AS1006870. Page 56, following line 28, insert C, a provision in the bylaws of a corporation which, were it a provision of the articles of incorporation, would accord with A of this section, shall be valid provided that it was adopted prior to March 24, 1982. Page 127, line 7 to 9, delete together with a verified copy of its articles of incorporation and all amendments to the articles. Page 138, line 28, insert Class A before misdemeanor. Page 139, line 9, insert Class A before misdemeanor. Page 147, lines 28 to 29, delete, except the village corporation that may be incorporated under either this chapter or AS 10.20. Page 148, line 8, delete, approved by the United States Secretary of the Interior. Page 148, line 18, delete, 7, print I, close print. Page 148, lines 25 to 26, delete, may not be considered to be a distribution in partial liquidation, and insert, is not a distribution to its shareholders as defined by AS 1006-990, paren 17, close paren. Page 149, line 12, following the period, insert, notwithstanding the provisions of AS 1006-574 to 1006-586, a plan of merger, consolidation, or exchange qualified under this section prior to December 19, 1991 shall not include the right of shareholders to dissent. Page 149, line 15, delete that is required by the language of that act. And page 161, line 13, delete July 1, 1983 and insert July 1, 1984.
Thank you.
I would move the amendments and ask unanimous consent.
Any objections?
Mr. Chairman?
Objections to the amendment?
Well, just a question, Mr. Chairman. Would the sheriff prefer to have a committee substitute moved out with those amendments contained in it, or keep them separate?
What did we decide this morning? To keep them separate because of the...
No.
We're going to have to print a final document.
We have to get a committee substitute in.
Right, so this would be amendments to the bill before us, and then we'll draft it. We'll draw a committee substitute incorporating these amendments.
So you would entertain
a motion to accept the amendments
in the committee substitute,
and then we'll
move the committee
move the okay, we can do it that way. We'll accept the amendments as into a committee substitute, then we'll move the committee substitute.
Okay. Well, I would offer the amendments again into the committee substitute. Adopt as amendments.
Objections? Carried. Well, I guess we have to move the committee substitute. And then we'll address the letter of maybe we should move the letter of intent, which refers to the commentary, which is this thick. I suspect we'll move the letter of intent, which refers to this, and then move this committee substitute out also. In the proper order, I believe. What do we fall on the floor? So we can use that here. Okay.
I would move the letter of intent. Be attached to the committee substitute with the adopted amendments.
And which refers to the commentary by the Code Commission for the journal.
Right.